joy, joy.
So, Diana G, thank you for taking the time. So, you're normally in India. What's it like there?
Well, I've been there almost 18 years now. And when I first went to India, I didn't know if I would be staying there or living there or visiting. And I asked Swami Kriyanandaji, who was there about a year and a few months before I came, if I should stay or if I should go back to Ananda Village. And interestingly enough, Swamiji looked at me with such an interesting face, and he said, "What do you mean? Look around. You're desperately needed." And I was so happy to be able to stay there. Of course, I would miss people here and all, but I felt I wanted to be with Swamiji. So what is it like there? It's amazing how much energy, how many people have come forward, how many centers there are now. There was one at the beginning, and now there are 10. There's online communities. There's a community coming up for the monastery. They've just purchased land, and it's booming in India. And what I'm so pleased with is that what Swamiji wanted is happening. He always said from the very beginning, "I want Indians leading this work." And he also told some of us, "I've brought you here and I'm placing you in position so when I'm gone, you can be here." And I said to him, "I'm going to be here, Swamiji," but he was very clear that he wanted Indians to lead the work. And when there were 40 Westerners there, he would say that every time almost that we were gathered, and we said, "Well, Swamiji, there's no one here but us." He said, "It doesn't matter, I want Indians." And they came. And many now are leading the centers. Most of them are being led by Indians. And if not, the Westerners have pulled back and allowed the local Indians to lead the groups, lead the centers, lead the meditation groups, online programs, and everything that we have. And I know Swamiji would be pleased about that because that's what he really wanted. And so we still travel around when there's no COVID and help the various centers. But now people have, Indians, local Indians have left their jobs, many of them, to serve this work. I can think about 10 right off the top of my head who've just said, "No, I want to serve this work completely now." And they're in charge of publications and Ananda publications of the various centers of online and various programs. And so India is a young work. People are maybe in their 30s or 40s, the average age of people. And they have a lot of energy. They've got a lot of initiative and they've got a lot of joy. And for me to be able to serve there, it's an honor. People ask me, "What did I get or what do I get from India?" Because it's not easy. It's not an easy life, but who's looking for an easy life? It's hot right now. It's 110 degrees. And every day it's been that way for some weeks. And there's a lot of pollution. There's overpopulation. But I can say what I've gotten from India, which is the greatest blessing, really, one of the greatest blessings in my life, is depth. Spiritual depth. It's in the soil, it's in the ether, it's in the people, it's everywhere. And to have that gift given to me in my life is one of the greatest gifts I have. And the other is that those of us who are serving there, we know he wanted us to be there. And so when you're where your guru wants you to be, you're happy, things are taken care of, and we have so many friends. I didn't have one friend when I went to India. I didn't know one Indian. But I knew I wanted to help Swamiji. And the first day, practically, I think it was the very first day, if not the second day, I was in my room and someone knocks on the door. And they said, "Now, Diana, can you come down and give a class?" And I said, "What do you mean? I've just arrived. Isn't there anybody else who can give a class?" And I said, "No, there's nobody else. they're going off, they're going away, and we need you for the class, and it's about Kriya, and you love Kriya, so just go down there. And I hadn't even unpacked my bags, but I went downstairs, and I fell in love. I fell in love with India. I fell in love with the Indians. They had so much heart and so much devotion. And they won my heart. And that's also what I can say about India, is it's full of heart and full of love for God. And if anybody hasn't gone there, please go, because our gurus are out of India. Of course, they're omnipresent, but in the lifetime we know, they came out of that Indian soil. All of our practices, Kriya, Hatha Yoga, Pranayama, Om technique, Hong Sa, everything that we do is coming out of India. And we have to respect her. And India, Master Swamiji says, the guru of the world. And you certainly feel that when you're there. And I remember one time I was serving in India, and I just felt it was such a difficult time. I mean, the beginning was a startup. You can imagine what it was like. We didn't know people. We didn't know anything about what to do. And Swamiji had plans and plans and plans. He just keeps saying, get out there, do something. But I remember once I was teaching at a school. It was a meditation class at a school that we were renting, and everything was just kind of dirty, and I had to set up the chairs and sweep the floor before the class and get the altar and the books, and it was so hot outside, and there was no air conditioning, and I was by myself. I had come in a taxi, and I mean, this is how it is in India, that you just keep moving. So there I was, and I just thought, this is just too much. And the thought came in my mind, and I know it was from Divine Mother or Master. The thought was, you can find God, do your service here in India. And it wasn't like when, but it was like, this is what you need to be doing. And so being in India, I know Master wants me there. Swamiji made it clear that he wanted me there. And it was about 2 weeks after I had arrived that he asked me to begin to give Kriya. And I was just not prepared for that. I'd been with the Kriya Sangha for many years, 14 years. But Swamiji said, I for many years wanted you to give Kriya, but it wasn't time yet. He said, now is the time. And I just thought, I'm not ready for that, but he didn't care about that. And then he said, I want you to go all around India and teach people Master's teachings, teach Kriya. And I believe we were every month going to a different state, teaching. It was so fulfilling to see hundreds and hundreds of people coming to the lectures, and they didn't know us, and they didn't know Ananda Sangha yet, but they knew Master. And I would say 90% of the people who came raised their hands, saying they had read Autobiography of a Yogi. And so Master's book was there, his vibration was there, but the practicality wasn't. What do I do now? People kept saying, I don't know the teachings, I don't know the techniques, I don't know another person who even meditates using his practices. And so Ananda Sangha, Swamiji was really in tune. He brought us there at just the right time when people were open. And at the beginning, some of the people would tell us, well, my parents told me to wait till I'm old to start practicing yoga and meditation because I should be working my job now. And then they would see all of us young, happy, energetic, and doing whatever we needed to do, but bringing God into the middle of it. And so now all the young people come, old people, everybody comes in. And I want to share this one very touching story that happened while Swamiji was still in India. And it happened at the very beginning. And this Swamiji had been in India in the late 50s, early 60s. And then he left. And no one knew where he was or why he left or anything. And then, in the meantime, he founded Ananda. And then he went back in 2003. And while he was there in the late 50s, this man came with his son. And the man, he asked for Kriya Diksha from Swamiji, Kriya initiation. And so Swamiji interviewed him and said, okay, you can take Kriya. Then his son said, well, what about me? And the son was 12. Hmm. And Swamiji said, well, just wait a little bit. You can take it later. So then the man took Kriya and Swamiji left and didn't come back for many years. And I couldn't believe this happened, but right there at the center, at the ashram where we were having lunch one day, Swamiji was there at the table, and across from him was this man who said, do you remember who I am? And Swamiji just looked at him, and he said, I was the little boy who was 12 years old when I asked you for Kriya, and you gave it to my father, and you told me to wait. And Swamiji's face just lit up, and the man said, I mean, this was like 47 years later or something, and the man said, I waited all these years to take Kriya from you. And I just loved Swamiji's response. He looked so deeply into his eyes, this man's eyes. He says, I waited too. And so that man took his Kriya, not specifically from Swamiji, but from the Sangha. And this is what happens in India. The guru-disciple relationship is so cherished and so respected. And these are the things that, there's a memory that we have about India. It's familiar, just like all the teachings and the chants and the pictures of our gurus. There's a familiarity there. And so when people come like that, you just feel the depth of what has happened in that situation, that relationship. Mm-hmm. So this is what I would say about how is it going in India. I mean, I could go on and on for hours, but I think you get the picture.
You mentioned how important it was to Swami that the Indians take over the work there. Why do you think that was so important?
Because he wanted local people, just like in Europe. Many of us went to help start the work in Europe, and then most of us left. And there are only a few who stayed because he wanted Europeans leading things there, and they would know better. And also, here's an interesting thing that happened, because I didn't really understand this so much myself, especially because nobody was there but us. But Swamiji was right, and he kept inviting people. Someone would come to a satsang, and he didn't hold back. He would say, why don't you join us? I've seen you at the satsangs. Why don't you help me with this project? You know how Swamiji always, I think he created projects to bring people into the fold, so to speak. And so, but what I noticed was that as soon as we had Indians who came often, more Indians came. And as soon as we placed someone in a position of leadership there at a center, then all the locals came, all of them. But when it was just us, people would say, oh, this is nice, and it seems like it's an American thing. And but they've been on the path 40 years. It's good for them, but what is it doing for us? And as soon as we would place, I saw this in Delhi, I saw it in Gurgaon. You have a person who's local, just like a magnet, everybody would come. And they'd come to things, and they'd enjoy them, and they would talk to that person instead of coming to us, because it was like, I don't know, I don't want to tell my problems to them, or, you know, I'm embarrassed or something like that. But they would talk to that local person, and now I'm just so happy that every center has people who are local there, who live in that area, and many of them have been with us since the beginning, you know, 18, 20 years. And so they've earned it. It's not like you just find somebody off the street and put them in position, but they've been coming around, they've been meditating, they've been doing Kriya for a long time. And the wonderful thing is, it's like the story of the bicycle that Swamiji would often tell. It's like, he would say that he got a bicycle for his birthday, and he taught everybody in the neighborhood how to ride. He'd put them on the bike, and he would hold on and run along with them until they were secure. And then they would go on their own. And that's what's happening in India. They're holding on, you know, making sure that people aren't falling off or going in the wrong direction. But then at a certain point, don't go for it. And we're encouraging people. You know better. Make the decision. As long as things are in tune and they don't go way off, then, you know, we're encouraging, applauding. Yes, do it. And I'll tell you one other thing. It was much harder when we were on our own because we didn't know the culture. We didn't know the country. We didn't know the customs. Now all I do is ask my Indian guru bhais, what would you do? What's the right thing here? Have I said the wrong thing? Is this a good story to use? Is it not a good story? You know, there are many things we just don't know in the culture. So you can't just assume, and you make many mistakes, as we did. But now people come because it's led by Indians. And it's, you know, Westerners are respected in India. It's not like people don't want Westerners, but it's like a blend. What I love, it's the East and West. As Master said, East and West must meet and will meet. And, you know, America and India will meet and will lead the world. And so we're doing our part in that. And it's a nice blend. It's a wonderful fit. There's never a feeling of looking down or we're better than you or you're better than us, or it's just a very joyful blend. And why is that? Because I think we've been together many lifetimes before. I mean, I know I lived in India. It's just so familiar, and the people I've met people, I go, I know that person. And many of the Ananda people from here in the West go there, and they have the deep relationships with people. I know that person. People come from India, they go to America. Oh, yes, I remember you, and it's a soul contact. And so where we live in this lifetime, what difference does it make? We're all trying to find God wherever he's placed us. And what a joy it is to be able to just feel the vibrations of East and West coming together that way. But really, I've met some very, very, very fine people, very deep, very bright, with a lot of heart. That combination is unbeatable. You know, head and heart balanced like that, I can name many names. And working hard, but always walking side by side with us. There's nobody saying, oh, it's not your culture, we're going to do it. And it's a very, very good blend. And I have to say that Swamiji laid the pattern before he left his body. And he said himself, only he could have started that work in India. Everywhere he went, he would typically have on his robes, or people knew he was a Swami. And even if they didn't know him, they bowed down at his feet, in the malls, you know, in the restaurant, and everywhere that Swamiji went. And then he was on television, on those programs, and people knew him from that, and they knew him from the books, and it was like he founded a beachhead there. He wanted a lot happening in the school. We started a school. It didn't last that long, but he wanted to plant that seed himself, and now we have another school that is lasting in Pune. But everyone knew this Swami Kriyananda. And because he was able to lay that foundation, he drew people. And who he drew, shall I say, were his own. His own from other lives who were here again to serve Master's work and to help it to move forward. And so we have that in America, we have it in Europe, we have it in India, and I believe we were all doing this together many lifetimes before.
Diana, when did you first meet Swami?
Well, that's a good question, because I think I met him many lifetimes before, because I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. It was rough, it was tough. There were drugs going on. There were shootings. The school I went to was what was named the worst in the country for many years. It was Compton High. By the time I left that school, the people were starting to bring guns in. Thank God I got out of there before that. Then I went to a very good college, UC Berkeley. That was by God's grace. I was the only person in my family who ever went to college. And I got in under a special program for underprivileged kids to be able to get to good schools, into good schools. So I was there for 4 years. That was tough, let me just say that. But what happened was my energy lifted up while I was in school because I had to study so much. I was always a good student, but this was beyond what I ever could imagine that you'd have to do for getting a grade. In the first quarter, I had an F on my at my midterm. I just went, I can't do that. I'm flunking out of school. But you know what happened? I went to the library every day. At first, I had a half-time job and I had a grant, but you know, I could barely stay in the school financially. So I had to work, and then I was flunking out. So I had to get to the library. So after work, I'd be in the library till 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning every day. And I worked hard, that's what I'm trying to say, but I pulled that F up to an A by the final. And then I got a C in that terrible class. Physical anthropology. I had to have a science, but I had to have that science class, but I still can't tell you what it was about. But I passed it at least. That was the very first quarter. So then that's how I worked the entire 4 years of college. By the time I got out of college, my ears were just steaming. My whole brain was steaming. All the other kids, the smart kids, were going off skiing, you know, and doing all. I never did any of that. And my mother said, "Are you coming for Thanksgiving?" "I can't come. I'm flunking out of school." So I worked that hard for 4 years. And so my energy was really higher and my brain was like alive completely. And I had focus, I had concentration. I was determined, and all through college, I kept saying, "I can learn, I can learn." And so I was able to learn. And then after that year, I said, "I am never going to study like that again." And then I met Swamiji. I've been studying ever since. I mean, that was like, I graduated in 1976, and since then I've been studying almost every day for some class or something. And so I think I was so ready by then. I had to go to, I had to have that transition. So I had to lift myself up, because I came out from a, and I never felt I was from that community that I was in. But now I look back and I think that was such good training because I could go anywhere. I had strength with me and I was determined and I had will. So I could go to India and I just felt like, yeah, this is fine for me. Other people would have wilted. But so after 1 year, I was working with social services. I was working with the Big Sister, Big Brother program. Then I had another job. I was successful. Let's put it that way. It wasn't like I went to the path because I was a failure. I went to the path with energy. And what happened was I had everything that you could want to have. Everything people said, if you have these things, you'll be happy. I had a good job. I had good house and car and friends and money and health and everything. I was 21 years old and I just thought, man, this is nothing. This is my life. I'm supposed to be happy with this the rest of my life. And that was my soul calling out. And so I remember one night I cried and prayed all night long. And I just said, if there's a God, I want to know you. I just want to get out of this pain. I just felt the pain of being in a life that wasn't my life. this wasn't my life, and I knew it. But what was my life? I didn't know. But I just knew there was something more. So then a miracle happened the very next day. I felt it was my first prayer that really was answered. The very next day, I went to a store to buy something for the kids.
The kids, meaning the social services kids?
Yeah, those kids I was working with. And I saw this little pamphlet at the checkout stand that said meditation. And as I said, nobody where I live was meditating. Yoga and India and gurus. And it was get the food on the table. And so when I saw this book, and something in me just said, just get it, buy it. And so I bought it, and I was at my lunch break. I sat out in a park, and I was reading this little pamphlet, and it was on TM, Transcendental Meditation. And so I my heart and soul were just like pulsating from, because it was a memory from before. And I just thought, I gotta do something about this. And so what happened? I looked down from where I was. I was out in a park on a bench, and not far from me, a little distance, I looked down, and there was somebody sitting like this on another bench. I was shocked. I got up, I ran over. It was a man, and he was sitting, and I said, hey, what are you doing? Now, in today's world, you probably wouldn't do that, but I said, what are you doing? And I'll never forget, he opened his eyes, he says, well, I was meditating. And I said, I'm just reading about this meditation. I've just got to learn this meditation. It turns out he was a TM teacher, he and his elderly mother. And they taught at their house. Within 1 week, I went with my fruits and flowers, and I learned TM. And this was a black man at that. I just couldn't believe it. Now, what book did they give me? Autobiography of a Yogi. What a blessing. Can you believe that story? So I have Master's book, and I'm looking at his picture, and I'm just knowing, I love this man. I don't even know who he is. I read the book. Most of it went way over my head. It's probably happened for you. And I just thought, I don't know what this means, but I love this man. And so then I lived in Los Angeles. So I started going to his churches and shrines, not to the services at first, but just to absorb the vibrations. I would go to the Lake Shrine every week. I'd often go to Encinitas, I would go to Hollywood Church, I'd go up to the crypt, you know, Mount Washington, I just go and just absorb the vibrations. And then I started going to the satsangs down at the Lake Shrine, and it wasn't long before someone came up to me and said, do you know about Ananda? And I went, no. And they said, there's a very fine yogi, Swami Kriyananda, and he lives at Ananda, and he teaches you, he trains you in master's life, not just the techniques, and he teaches Kriya, and there's people who live there full time, and they practice these teachings. I just couldn't believe that a place like that existed. And so I drove up there alone in my little car, and I mean, this was a big step for me. And I go up, and there was some big weekend, and because I still have my job, and you know, I wasn't going to live, I was just going to see Ananda. So I went up and was in Swamiji's dome at his house upstairs there, and I was very, I didn't know anybody, so I was very shy and kind of withdrawn. But I liked him, but I nobody looked familiar. You know, it was like a very interesting hippie kind of look, a group of people. And I was very straight, you know, I was very, you know, straight out of the city, almost with high heels on. Just, you know, I was just like, I don't think this is for me. But Swamiji reached out to me. He was sitting not that far away, but there were people mingling and talking to him. And he saw me. And I think, well, I may have been the only African-American person there at the time, at least for this weekend. And he reached out to me. He said, "What is your name?" And so I came closer and I told him, and you won't believe what he said. He said, "This is your home. You should think about living here." And I thought, he doesn't know who I am. I said, I bet he says that to everybody. So I didn't want to be disrespectful, so I didn't really say anything, but I wasn't planning to live there at all. And so I left, and I told some people that I had met on the weekend. I said, he said that to me, and I bet he said, he doesn't say that to everybody. Why don't you listen? And I was very stubborn and, you know, rebellious like most of the Ananda people. And I just, I went home and I couldn't get his words out of my mind. And I think Master spoke to me through Swamiji. So that's how I met him. And I went back and I tried to live my old life, and it didn't work really. So then I came back as an apprentice. That's what happened. And I lived at the meditation retreat, and Prakash was my mentor, and he was very austere. And, you know, you had to meditate, you had to, you know. And I was disciplined, but he was austere. And so then I was at the meditation retreat, and all I did there was seemingly be in the kitchen with the dishes. There was mountains of dishes. And I'm just thinking, why am I doing dishes? I should be doing something else. And I was just washing the dishes, and they didn't often let me cook anything. I really couldn't cook, to tell you the truth. But at a certain point, I just got tired of that. And in the night, I just left. I did tell Prakash, but I didn't tell anybody else. And I just said, it's not the life for me. So I went back to LA. I think I was in LA then. And I just, I might have been in Palo Alto by then. And I was in Palo Alto. I just kept trying to get my old life back. Where are the friends and the things I used to do? And it was gone. It was so far gone. But I stayed away because of my stubbornness 3 whole years. Hmm. And I just got hammered. Hmm. You know, anything that could go wrong, went wrong. This master shut that door, and shut that door, you want that? I'm gonna shut that door for you, and I'm gonna shut that door. And I'm so grateful, because had he not shut those doors, I would have gone this way, that way, every possible way, but he just said, he just lassoed me. And at a certain point, I could hear him saying, not audibly, but in my heart, just go back to Ananda. You don't have to live there, just go back. And I did. I went for a weekend, and I thought no one would remember me. I didn't want anybody to remember me, because I was just in and out, remember? I wasn't going to stay, and everybody remember me. Isn't your name Diana? You were here before, weren't you? Weren't you here 3 years ago? What are you doing now? And I just told them all these things. Oh, I have this business going, I have that business, and I'm doing this. And it was all these things that had no meaning at all. And people said, what is it you're doing? And it really touched me. I just thought, and not just touched, it woke me up. And then they said, I was in Palo Alto, they said, we just bought East West Bookshop. Why don't you go there? There's some Ananda people there, and they have a little house where they all live together. And go there, and you like the bookshop, and you probably like the people. And I went the next day. I remember I cried all the way back home. I wasted 3 years. What did I do with my life? And I got back, I met those nice people. And then I started, every day I would go to the ashram, because they invited me, and we would go play tennis, some of us, a lot of us did, and And then I'd go for dinner. Then I'd go meditate with them all at the house, and then we'd have dinner at the house. And that went on night after night after night. And then they said, well, Diana, why don't you move in? Because you're here every day. And I said, no. I don't know what it was. I didn't want to let go of my independence, you see. I have my own place. I have my own thing going. And, I didn't have anything going. And so what happened was they kept asking me. This went on forever. And finally, Master took charge of it, and he had someone break into my car. And so my car, my brand new, beautiful car, the tape dash, they used to call it, was taken 2 times. And after that, I said, okay, I'm moving in to the ashram. And so then I lived in the very first little Palo Alto house, a 3-bedroom, 5-bedroom, 7, however, I went, lived in the very first 3 Palo Alto houses. And that's really where my spiritual life began.
So did you transition to moving up to Ananda Village at a certain point?
Yeah, well, what happened was this. I got so drained with my job that I just thought, I want to give my whole life to Master. I mean, I just felt this isn't my life. And so I was working in the Bay, in the Palo Alto area, and then I was living in the house here, as I said. So then it took me about a whole year to work out paying off all my bills, because I wanted to just give my whole life to Master. And I did. And then I let Swamiji know, I'm done. I just want to serve this work now. He said, move up to San Francisco house and train. Those are the words he used, train under Jyotishin Devi. I've been training under them ever since. That was in 1981 or 82. And so I moved there, and I left a big salary for going to $35 a month, plus room and board. But if you needed more money, you could work a temporary job and then pay off. Plus we were paying our Ananda membership, which was $1,000 at the time. I don't know how I got that paid off, but somehow did my mother help me. But then after about 2.5 years or so, Swamiji came back from Europe, from Italy, and he said, we were in San Francisco house in the dining room, the big dining room, you may remember. And Swamiji came back and he said, well, I've had a wonderful trip and I'm thinking about going back at whenever this was, I think it was February. And at the time that was around November, November. And he said, he told me that he was thinking about taking me back, a few other people as well, back to Italy to live. And that was a shocker. I mean, everybody in the room was shocked. There were at least 30 people or 40 there. And then, but I was always game and I was willing. I mean, I hadn't been anywhere besides California. And he asked me what I thought. I said, sure. And some people asked Swamiji later, they said, how do you think the Italians are going to respond having black people come over for Ananda? And he said, I think it'll be just a wonderful novelty. And it was. And it was a joy. Within 3 months, we were gone. And it was Ram, Keshava, Prahlad, and myself. And Swamiji said, we'll get a work going here, or you'll have a wonderful vacation. So I'll tell you, it was not a vacation. And we did get a work going that's still going to this day. That was in 1982. We went, and I spent 7 years there helping to launch. I've always sort of been helping to get things started. That was tough, but I won't go into that right now. But I can say I was about 28 years old then. And by the time I came back, I had grown significantly. So we put it that way, on all levels. And when I came back to America, on the way back, Swamiji, he called and he said, go to Africa before coming back. And he, that was about all he said. Pretty much he hung up. And he didn't say where, who, how, when. He just said, go to Africa. And so we had to figure it all out. But what a great trip that was. And I didn't ever feel I had any desire to go to Africa. And it wasn't like I felt in tune with Africa at all. I mean, the land was, that was, I did feel a nice vibration there. But with the people, I didn't feel any connect. But we were there 2.5 months in Nigeria, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. And interestingly, now there are people from South Africa coming through India, through on our home study. And who knows, that's starting to open up. So those were seeds that were planted. So anyway, after that, I came back and I lived at Ananda Village for 14 years. And now I've lived in India longer than I lived at Ananda Village. So I think at this point, I'll probably be in India for quite a while. Mm-hmm.
You've learned Hindi?
Yes, I can say, main Hindi bolti hu, mera naam Diana hai. Main Delhi mein rehti hu. Yes, I have learned Hindi. And Swamiji from the very beginning told me to learn Hindi. Now, I still have a lot to learn, but Italian was easier because the brain was younger, and Italian is one of the Romance languages, and I did know Spanish. I studied Spanish, but Hindi was like way from another part altogether. But I can say that whenever Swamiji would chant in Bengali or Hindi, or I always felt like, well, my heart was just opening up. But otherwise, I never felt a familiarity with the language. It must be in there somewhere. That's what I keep affirming. It's there. It's there. But yes, now I can teach Kriya in Hindi, which is a miracle. I tell you, that was difficult. But from the very beginning, Swamiji said, Diana, learn Hindi. And I didn't want to disappoint him. So I started right away, but I just, it was a long time before. And I had about 12 teachers. I mean, many teachers, everybody I could grab, please come in my room and talk with me in Hindi. And they were all good teachers, but I had to be pushed. So finally I was pushed to in the Kriya Sangha, because Brahmachari Vineet kept saying, we need someone to give the Kriya in Hindi, and there's nobody else, you know, Aditya can do it, but we really want you. And I knew it was Divine Mother pushing me, and Master and Swamiji, and I mean, I couldn't back out of it anymore. And so I took, for the whole year, I took parts, the first part of Kriya, the second part of Kriya, the chant and the prayer I took before that, and then the fire ceremony, and then, you know, and then the Mahamudra, different parts, and then all the different parts of the ceremony, I took one at a time, and I kept adding them. By the end of the year, my goal was to give Kriya in Hindi. And lo and behold, there was a break in COVID. And we had a Hindi, Kriya, two of them, back-to-back, in person. I never thought I'd be teaching it in person. I thought I could look at my notes in front of me, but this was a live audience. But I'm telling you, as soon as I saw the people, the Hindi just flowed. They were so happy to be there. And there were like 10 one day, 10 on the other day. And I wanted it back-to-back so I could just get better the next day. So I've done 4 of those now. And every time it gets better. And what can I say? It really is the grace of God and gurus. But hard work is behind it, trying to get the phrases. And, you know, I've had some very good teachers up now at the end. But really, you just have to apply yourself. You need the time to practice and study. And now I also give classes on, this is like Kriya reviews, question and answer. But there's always somebody there who speaks really well, who can help me. But the students, they're so happy, mm-hmm. you know, that one of the directors speaks Hindi mm-hmm. is like huge, and that they're American, and I mean, they just see the effort, mm-hmm. and they just applaud it. They're just so happy, and that's what makes me happy. Mm-hmm. I know it's a huge help for the Sangha. And so why wouldn't I apply myself? It would only be out of laziness. Such I don't want to do it. Yeah. But I have capabilities of learning languages and applying it to this. I think it's one of the big reasons I'm in India. Hmm. And I think it's one of the things that Master's most pleased about. Hmm.
Dhyanaji, what do you think Swami is pleased about from your life with him?
Well, I think that's a good question. I would say that willingness, no matter how I felt about something, if I could do it or if I couldn't do it. And I remember once he asked me if I could run a restaurant. I said, yeah. Now, had I ever run a restaurant? Never. And this was our cafe in San Francisco. And I was, must have been 24, 25 years old. And it wasn't going very well. And by the time I got there, it went worse. But I did go there and help it to get work. No, I helped it to stay afloat a little while longer. But I was always willing. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, go, like going to Italy. I said, yeah, why not? Go to India. Okay, yeah. Go to Australia. Yeah. Go to Africa. Okay, yeah. I just never was afraid. Or I didn't hold back because of I'm not qualified or there must be somebody better. Like he said in India, look around. I mean, like there's nobody else. And because there was nobody else to step out there, I was always willing. And it wasn't that it was always great, but I knew I wanted to stand with Swamiji. And whatever he was doing, if he needed my help, I was going to be there. And I think maybe that's the biggest thing, that he knew he didn't have to ask me, that I was going to be there no matter what. And mm-hmm. when he said to us about India and placing people in positions who will be here when I'm gone, I said right away, I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be here. He knew he could rely on me. And that to me is the greatest blessing because he gave me that. You know, he gave me that ability. And so I think that's would be the thing that maybe he would be most pleased about.
How do you mean he gave you that ability?
That he trained me. I mean, everything I have is from Master and Swamiji. Okay. And so the ability to say yes to life, you know, to be able to put out the energy, greater the will, greater the flow of energy, to draw inspiration, to be magnetic. All of these things, they came from me listening to and following Swamiji's example and his teachings and, you know, being unafraid. I mean, I remember at the very beginning, I was scared to death. I didn't want to teach and all these things were just, I just was so happy just to be quiet in the back. And he didn't see that as how I would grow. It wasn't a thing about ego or, you know, I wasn't going to grow if I sat in the back row. And I loved to share. He knew that. And he saw my heart was just, I loved people helping people. Even if I didn't know, you know, all the ins and outs and the teachings, I loved people and, you know, helping people. And I think Swamiji, he knew I would grow the most if I could get out there. So it was like, a bird in a nest. He keeps pushing me out of the nest, like, get out there. And when I least thought I could do anything, he just didn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was going through big struggles of my own, he didn't care. It was like, get out there. This is your dharma. Mm-hmm. And some of my hardest struggles, he would just, you know, I'd be looking at him like, help. And he gave me the help I needed. He didn't give me the help I wanted. He never was pampering and, okay, take a break. He was just like, go for it. I remember once he looked at me and he said, Dhyana, look what it takes to find God. And I just looked at him like, I can't do that. And then he added, look what I've had to go through. And I just wanted to just throw in the towel at that point. And then he just said, you can do it. And I remember one time, one of the kindest things I saw Swamiji do in my life. And I was in America, I was living in India at the time, but I was visiting America, and I was struggling with the variety of things. I mean, India was new, and you know, there was a whole lot of things going on. And so then I was talking on the phone with a couple of the Indian gurubais, and you know, they were saying, well, how are you doing? Because you know, I wasn't doing very well. Oh, I go to hope you're gonna be better. And then they said, Swamiji just walked into the room. I said, don't give him the phone. Please do not give the phone to Swamiji. Swamiji wants to talk with you. So I knew it was a setup. So they must have told him what was going on. So Swamiji says, oh, Dhyana, how are you? And then he didn't wait a long time for the response. So I said, well, and he said, okay, now what are you doing there in America? And I said, oh, Swamiji, I'm doing this. And I said, and I'm reading your books and to help, you know, help me, to uplift me. And he says, well, which ones? And I said, well, I'm reading, I named all the books. And he said, what did you like in those books? Now, then I got to know, he's just keeping me on the phone. And every time he kept me on the phone, my energy kept rising more and more. And then he said, I said, well, you know, and I was feeling better. I said, well, I like this part of the book. Why? And I would say something more. And he said, well, that's interesting. What about the other books? And he kept me on the phone at least 10 or 15 minutes talking about the books. And then when he felt I was like better, he says, okay, bye-bye. And that was it. And I knew exactly what he did. And I thought, what a great friend. Hmm. You know, anybody would have said, others would have not taken that time and patience, you know. And so, but he didn't let me cry on the phone. He just kept lifting me up. Hmm. And that was such, I'll never forget it. Hmm. That was, what a beautiful part of my life that was, lesson in my life.
Dhyana, what do you see for the future?
I think Ananda is just going to keep just bursting forth. I mean, there's so many great souls, and the seeds were planted by Master, and then Swamiji watered them, and then he told us to keep watering them, and we have an army of people that just is so happy and joyfully serving Master, and that joy creates energy and magnetism, and more people come, and they have energy and magnetism. And I think Ananda is one of the best things that's happening on this planet. And I think in hard times, in my heart, all I can think of is, how can we help people? How can we serve people in hard times? And I think Ananda's here for those hard times. When COVID hit, we were right up there. We were giving classes all the time, praying for people, astral ascension ceremony, doing healing prayers, yoga class, meditation. We just bursted out, Ananda worldwide. And so I think Ananda is here to help people, yes, to meditate, but also to help them in the painful times that are ahead. If they meditate, they don't meditate. We can pray for them. We can give them assistance, financial assistance even. And I think the future of where we're living doesn't look very good, but I think we've incarnated to bring light into dark times. Dark times will come. Our guru said it. Swamiji said repeatedly, we've got to know it's going to happen sometime. And we have to be prepared. We're Master's army of light to be able to just help. That's all I have in my mind. How can we help people? Not what about me? What about me? What about my family? What about, and to be the example of people for people and have communities where people can go to, places people can congregate. If they can't do that, maybe online is the only way. But to not, I was telling people during COVID, it's not a time to hide. Mm-hmm. It's a time to be present, be available, help people, talk to them, go to the hospital if you have to, and help people out. And I'm so pleased that Ananda Sangha, I'm talking particularly of India, but I know it happened worldwide, that we were right there for people. People told us more than our families. You all were there and you helped us. So I think coming in the future will be hard times. But for us, it's times we were born for. We were born for these times. There's no mistake. It's like, well, maybe I shouldn't have come. Well, you should have come. Master came and Swamiji came and they brought us. And so now we have to hold that baton and keep going with the light and bringing that to people everywhere. And as we do, as Master said, the channel will be blessed, is blessed by what flows through it.